So thank you very much, and I'm happy to take questions. And when it's detailed information about what was said or what not said, I'm going to pass it to Manuel, who has got a better memory than I. Okay, who wants to begin? Yeah.
I'm just wondering about the logistics of it all. You had all the lay couples there. Were they there all the time? And also, was there simultaneous translation? Because not everybody would be speaking.
Okay. Yeah. They were there all the time. They played a full part in the small group discussions in the different languages, and there was simultaneous translation into four languages the whole way through.
Yeah. Must have been exhausting.
It was very tiring, but invigorating too.
May I add, there were 13 couples, and they were from 5 different continents.
Christopher,
hi. Two questions. The first is, there's been a lot of comment in the media at the end of the synod document suggesting it's a setback for Pope Francis. Would you accept that something has shifted in the church from following these 2 weeks, that the church is on a course to a new pastoral language and tone when it comes to these difficult situations? You mentioned gay Catholics and divorced and remarried, and that it's about the church accompanying people. Would you say that is a shift that has happened, and whatever goes on in October 2015, that we're moving towards that? That's the first question. And the second thing is, you mentioned that the African voices, and I heard Archbishop Kaigama make the point that you mentioned there. Is that something that you would like to feed back here in London to aid agencies and to government and their concerns? Is that something you'd like to take forward?
I've been to quite a number of synods. I don't remember one that was as vigorous and as open and as direct as this. And by that I mean both what went on in the Synod Hall, the style of the meetings there, and also in relation to the media. There were one or two points where we reflected on the relationship with the media, and it was quite clear that the pathway of openness that he'd taken at the beginning, he was going to see right through to the end. So an example of that would be when the report of the Synod was finalised and voted on, there was a question of what happened to it. In the book, as I mentioned, some paragraphs would have been dropped, and it would have been simply given to the Pope and put into his care. He said, no, we've set out on a pathway of openness. We're going to continue. This goes immediately to the press. They've got to see how the voting went. I want everybody to know where we're up to and where we're moving on from. So I think there was a spirit of trust and openness, as I say, both within the Synod Hall and outside of it, which was, in my experience, remarkable and fresh. So, yes, I do think there's a tone and languages and language being developed. But more importantly than that, there was a profound sense of common purpose. And I think the leadership of the Pope gets us beyond argument and gets us into a profound acknowledgement of the genuineness and the sincerity of every opinion being expressed. You know, one of the principles of Ignatian spirituality is that you always attribute to another person the best motive. Now, we're very accustomed, and our, you know, culture is to start by attributing to other people the worst of motives. But what Pope Francis is doing is imbuing the church, or at least this synod, with that spirit of attributing to each other the best of motives for what is being said. And then I think we are really open to be led by the Holy Spirit as he wishes. The second question. Well, I've made the point 2 or 3 times in terms of the press, so I hope you would express it clearly. Well, I will. Yeah, I will talk with Cafford about that. Yeah.
Madeline Tehan from the Catholic Herald. I'm sure that you're aware that the language of the midterm report on certain areas, for example, homosexuality, cohabitation, raised a lot of expectations among some of the laity, very, very sensitive issues. And I wondered if you thought it was truly pastoral to release a midterm report which suggested that church teaching on very sensitive areas was about to change, and now actually it's caused a lot of distress. Is that really pastoral?
Well, it was honest, and it was the path we took. And
but why was it necessary to release that?
Because I think it's important that people knew how this synod was taking shape. I mean, I was among those who were critical of that interim report. But that wasn't the point. The point was, here was an attempt to summarise where we'd got to, and then we would move on. I understand why it was interpreted in the way that it was by some of the media. I think it was sensationalist.
The report or the media?
Yeah, I don't think people read the last paragraph. The last paragraph was perfectly clear. It said this document raises some questions and issues that need to be discussed. Nobody can read into that it is a signal of a change of the church's teaching. Nobody. Nobody with you reading intelligently. So I think there was some sensationalist reporting, but I understand why that was the case. And I think it's important that we follow the process and are peaceful and tranquil about it. And I would be grateful if that too could be got across.
Absolutely, but the contrast in language is such that actually it may have done more to damage, done more pastoral damage in the long run, because people will be disappointed.
I think you're running ahead of yourself, because in all honesty, you haven't read the synod report yet, unless you're very good at Italian, because it's not been made available in English yet. And there are paragraph after paragraph after paragraph in that which speaks the same language, the same words as the interim report. So the fact is, this synod took to heart, fully to heart, and has expressed in that in its report at the end of the 2 weeks both the need and the rightness of the church being more than ready to accompany people, starting from a position of wanting to see what is good in their lives that they can be built on, and avoiding the language of condemnation totally, I think. But that's the nature of the document, and I hope that when it's translated into English, you can read it all the way through.
And if I may just say something in the logistics side of the interim report, there is a presumption that someone made a choice, an intentional choice, to release this document on Monday morning. This is pro forma. Every synod, we have a process in which certain moments of the synod are released, regardless of what occurs or whatever happens. So it was specifically pro forma. No one said, go forth and release it to the media. I mean, it was our office at the press office that released that, because that's what we do in every synod.
Hi, Anthony from Premier Christian Radio. I've got two questions, if that's all right. The first one, the Pope said bishops should be open to being surprised by God. I just wonder, were you, or did you feel that other people were?
Oh, I think so, yeah. Yeah, and to me, there were some very, very important points of learning. Not just of an appreciation of the situation of the family in other parts of the world and some of the huge traumatic, dramatic situations that the family faces in the legal structure of some countries, how difficult it is for a Catholic to maintain their position and their faith. But also, I think, signaled in the depth of perceptiveness of the Pope's speech. Let me give you an example. I went to the Synod having read and aware of some of the proposals about admission of people to the Eucharist who are in second marriages. And in all of those proposals, there was a phrase used, after a period of penitence or a penitential journey. I didn't really know what that meant, But in the course of these last 2 weeks, I've begun to understand the depth of the intention behind that phrase and how it is precisely what the Holy Father means when he says we have to really tend the wounds and not simply offer a bandage. So let me give you an example. One of the bishops there said in his diocese he's been trying to explore and fashion a penitential journey for people in second marriages, a journey in which they would be accompanied closely by a spiritual guide, maybe a priest, maybe not. But one of the things they have to come to terms with is what effect has this had on the children of their marriage? How willing are you to face up to the burden that you have heaped on the shoulders of your children because of the breakup of your marriage? How ready are you to face the reality of your first spouse, whatever the circumstances? And how deeply is that in your heart, and how are you carrying that? And then thirdly, he said, and what about we have to talk through and genuinely explore your conscience before God as to what's happened. Now, I was speaking to one chap during the synod who is in a second marriage, and he said to me, these are the real questions. These are the real questions that people in that situation often struggle with great difficulty. Another example of a penitential journey that a number of priests have been developing, I learned, contains these two points. Do we really take to heart what baptism means? And do we really, as we live through all the difficulties of our lives, understand the abiding sense of Christ in our lives because we have been baptized into his life? Now, do we take that seriously, or are we skimming the surface? And then a second, to me, most demanding point that this particular pathway of penitence was focusing on was that in Catholic belief, a valid marriage is a sacrament to which Christ gives his word. So, for a person who's in a second marriage, that sacrament, their first marriage, remains a source of grace. Now, I've never thought that before. And they go on to say, even if it's the grace of repentance and sorrow, but that sacrament never goes away and remains a potential source of grace for somebody as they carry on making the best of their lives with all sincerity and integrity. So these are ways in which I found this synod an opening experience, something that was opened up in me. And I think I understand some of these things now at a far greater depth than I had done when I went.
Thank you. If I could go back to the paragraphs on gay and remarried Catholics, there was obviously a difference of opinion there. Do you worry now that there might be a postcode lottery of the welcome that gay and remarried Catholics might face if they go to different dioceses and faced by different bishops?
Well, and if you're talking about this country, I was the only one there. So, I mean, you know, and I said on the radio, I was disappointed with that paragraph because I didn't think it went far enough. But what I think is the simplest thing for me to say is that those votes were an indication of where a debate is up to. None of this is off the table. It's an ongoing reflection, and it takes in the whole world. So, you know, this might be a very keen issue for us. It might not be in other parts of the world. They might have far more important things on their minds. But we have the ongoing agenda in that paper, and very helpfully, we have at least an indication of things that are wholeheartedly and totally accepted and things that still have to be talked about with great honesty and openness and trust.
Sorry, before I get into the proper question, which paragraph was it you were disappointed with because it didn't go far enough? The welcoming to gay people
one. Yeah, I said that on the Sunday programme, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And But you would nonetheless have voted for it in the absence of anything better, or did you? I mean, I'm quite interested. You said you didn't vote for the paragraphs that.
No. I've not said anything about how I voted. Actually, I said there were three. Pardon?
Would you tell us how you voted?
Well, I'm rather embarrassed by this, but it's the honest answer. Is I was dithering, and we were going through these votes so quickly, and I was dithering between exactly as you put it, Andrew, thinking on the one hand I'm not satisfied with this, but on the other hand, it might be the best we're going to get. And I know it's silly, but I honestly can't remember which button to press now at that moment. My intention coming up to it was to say, no, this isn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a second thought at the last minute.
Mm-hmm. Can I go back to the remarriage point as
Certainly.
You were talking earlier about the first marriage remaining as source of grace even for people who are making the best of their lives. But I take it from this that you assume that the second marriage is making the best of their lives.
Well,
or
I think...
can be sometimes.
I think you will find in paragraphs in this report from the Synod precisely that conviction. You will find, when you get it, in paragraph 25,
right.
You will find that expressed. If I can try and translated for you from the Italian. Oh, you can do better than I can. There you are. That
bit. No, because then I actually can't do it.
Fine.
Because
okay. The Church looks with love on those who participate in her life. This is on the topic of people who are in second marriages, who participate in her life in an incomplete way. Recognizing that the grace of God is at work in their lives, giving them courage to live a good life, to take a loving care of one for the other, and to be in generous service of the communities in which they live and work. So there's quite an explicit statement that we recognize the grace of God present in their lives.
Put it another way, we've come a long way from Brideshead Revisited.
Thank you, Andrew. Yeah.
Anybody else?
So that's the kind of paragraph that catches up and develops, actually, the interim report quite well.
Sorry, can I just clarify something? Do you think it's possible that on the vote on the paragraph on welcoming gay couples, that there may be some who voted against it because it didn't go far enough?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Okay, so that's why there may not have been majority.
Maybe. I mean, it's a guess. Okay. It's a hypothesis. Okay. But that was my dilemma.
Yeah. And do you hope that when in 2015 that the final document goes further on welcoming gay couples and on the divorce and remarried question? Is that your personal hope?
I think what is very important is that we keep the focus on the person, you know, and we keep recognizing and respecting and valuing and welcoming the goodness in every person. Now, the goodness in every person, whatever their sexuality, whether they're in cohabiting or whether they're in, you know, a second marriage, their lives continue to carry the hallmark of the work of the Holy Spirit. And that's what this synod is laying down, is that's the starting point of pastoral care. I'll tell you a story. I told it somewhere in Rome of when I was a young priest in Liverpool and going visiting people. And I remember going to visit one house of a couple with children who came to Mass every now and then. And it was a street front house, so, you know, straight into the living room. I don't think they wanted me. We were talking across the doorway. And I was saying to them, why don't you get married? You know, you've been together for 10 years and you've got two kids. And it just, you know, adds something. No, it just brings trouble when you get married. No. And then as we were having this discussion, as I was accompanying them on their way, and I'm not exaggerating, a chair came crashing out of the window of the next door house. And this guy said to me, he said, "They're married." So I said, okay, I'll come back another day. So, I mean, in one sense, what we're saying is, I think, the practice of priests. It is already, always has been, the practice of a priest to accompany. That's why it's important that it is reflected, you know, at this kind of level of the church as well. There was one lady who was in our group, and I asked her after a day or so, "How are you finding all of this?" She was from Australia. And she said, "I love it. I just love watching and listening to you, because this is the church at work. This is the church at this level at work. Not afraid of a disagreement, not trying to score points, but just trying to see where we were, see how we could express ourselves well, see how we could open up to the reality of the situation, always from the perspective of the faithful disciple of Jesus."